Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast. This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
Oh, no.
Aching silence.
Oh, it's awful. I knew it was coming, and I still just absolutely hated it.
Oh, it's like looking straight into a black hole.
That's exactly what it's like. It's exactly what it's like. That black hole being the absence of Sammy.
Just but please stay.
Please Don't stay. Leave. I know. It's
Don't
sad.
Leave.
It's
Hang
awful.
Out with us. Hang out with me.
You here with us. We need you here with us. Sammy will be back. Sammy's on vacation. We love that for her. We need that for her. Everybody deserves some time away.
Let's just hope that she doesn't experience anything like Midsummer, nothing like Speak No Evil.
Yeah, a lot of scary stuff can happen in Europe.
Yeah, she's in rural, like Netherlands area, kind of.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scary things that can happen.
Over there. We know it to be true. But we also know that she's surrounded by a lot of vessels on the water. You know, I think it's like...
Protecting her.
Exactly. The energy of vessels is going to make her strong. She'll be back. We're sad to be without her. We will soldier on. And other than that devastating, scary truth right now, did anything scary happen to you this weekend?
Well, besides having terrible allergies, the allergies continue. I fucking hate allergies. It's such a pain in the fucking ass, I gotta say, because you're not sick, so you don't have the excuse of being sick. You gotta just soldier through this.
It's like you still, it's the same as being sick.
I know.
I guess it's just you can't give it to other people, so it's okay. And you know what? That feels pretty fucked up.
I know.
That you're only allowed to succumb to sickness when it can affect other people. If it's only you and your body, it's like fucking deal with it.
Get over it.
This isn't going to affect me, so fucking get over it.
I know.
Pretty rude.
It also ruins this time of the year, which is supposed to be delightful. Finally, the sun is shining. It is warm outside, yet I am completely like bedridden by these allergies.
Ugh.
The thing I want to talk about, though, is I watched the first part of the Steve Martin documentary. Have you seen it?
Oh, I haven't, but I just love Steve Martin.
I loved it. It was so cute. I was totally hooked by the end. I really can't wait to watch the second
part. Steve Martin, star of It's Complicated, the thing he's most known for.
I know. And LA Story, my other favorite movie. But I think the thing that's scary about the documentary is that Steve Martin spent 15 years working on his act before he became famous. 15 years of like opening for musicians, of doing like college shows, of their people, of like 18 people being in the audience until he kind of started to get bigger and bigger audiences. And then he went on SNL, and then that just like broke him open to the world, and he became super fucking famous after that and was like selling out stadiums. But 15 years. I mean, you have to have stamina, commitment. You have to know that you're playing the long game.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine spending that long on just like 1 hour of material, essentially.
Also not knowing that it will ever pay off. Like, crazy. This could be 15 years. It could be forever. It could be like, it's like, it's really brave and it's really scary.
And it's also scary that you can't do that anymore because of the internet and social media. You can't. Like, you would.
Everyone... And the, just the way that television works and movies and all of it, it's like.
You can't. You don't have 15 years of time. You kidding me?
All of us might not have 15 more years of time.
I know. We already, as we told you a few episodes ago.
Like, clock is ticking.
Clock is ticking. Clock is fucking ticking. Yeah, anyway, so that part just really, I was like, wow, 15 years is so fucking long. But Steve Martin, just love him. It's a really comforting presence.
He is a really comforting presence.
The documentary is really fun. Really fun.
I love that. I will give that a try. Mm-hmm. I'll give that a try.
What about you? Tell me about your week.
Well, really what the scary thing, I guess, is I'm trying so hard not to succumb to the wedding industrial complex.
It's impossible. Okay, no, listen. The second you said wedding more than like three times, the algorithm heard you and it's been feeding you wedding industrial complex stuff.
Also, just within my own brain, like, I'm trying really hard to be like we just before we started recording, I was like, okay, Henley, it's like, what should my Botox timing be? Like, obviously I need to change my whole face before I get married. Like, the face I have currently cannot be the face that Joel marries. Obviously it needs to be different. Like, it's really wild. Like, I feel like I'm swimming upstream like every day of my life.
I don't know whether this would help or hurt, but one thing that I did when I was in this state of mind is I read Emily Weiss's the article she posted on Into the Gloss. She's like the founder of Into the Gloss, about everything she did before she got married. And it scared me so deeply that it made me be like so actually frightened of falling into that trap.
Yeah,
and it prevented me from doing a lot of that thinking and going down that rabbit hole.
Yes, I know that I'm like, I like refuse to quote unquote get into shape. Like, I'm like, one thing for it that's for sure not happening is like, I all of a sudden need to like eat healthier and exercise for the next 5 months. Like, no, I'm not doing that. I mean, I'll do what a regular person should do to be like, have a healthy body that I can manage, but I'm not like. But for whatever reason, that logic is not applying to my face, because I think too. I know, I have to stop. And I don't like mean it, but you know,
I know.
Like, here, one of my coworkers is getting married a couple months before me, and she's also very chill about it, and is like, you know, she's not doing all the insane stuff that women do before they get married. But you know, she was talking about when she's gonna start like getting. Her like all her facials, and I was like, oh right, yep, gotta get all my facials. Like, I'm just like all these things where I'm like, oh, I better do that. Yeah, that's right. That as a woman, it is my job to make sure that I do X. And honestly, maybe like some facials would be good because it's calming. Like, I'm trying to think of like, what can I do to tick the box of like, you're doing this for your wedding, but that is actually only soothing. Maybe that's the through line.
That's a smart way to look at it.
But And, you know, the thing about you're going to get your picture taken so much. And it's like, I've had my picture taken before with this same face and body, and it's fine. Like, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It'll be more pictures, sure. But it's still like, it's still me. But you start to get wrapped up in it. And you hear other people mentioning things about weddings. And like, oh, yeah, I remember before my wedding I did blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, I guess if I don't do blah, 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 I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life, because you're never going to have more photographs on your wedding day. And you better not hate yourself the way that all women do. We know we all do hate ourselves. And so we have to change ourselves before the wedding, so we can hate ourselves a little bit less for one day. It's really fucked up that I'm trying so hard not to succumb.
I guess the first step is being aware, and then just doing everything you can with that awareness. Because I think you're right. I think it's inevitable. I think that it's what you would have to be a hermit in order to avoid it, because it's going to be around you. The messaging is constant. It's relentless.
You'd have to be a hermit who has told nobody that they're getting married. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I would have to not have the internet and also not tell anybody I'm getting married.
And never discuss it until it actually happens. Just don't discuss it.
Just never discuss it.
There's no fun in that. This is a fun, I think it is a fun thing. It's a fun time. And let yourself enjoy it. You know, let yourself like, you know, it's fine.
And I am.
But it takes a lot of maintenance. And the thing about the pictures is that even no matter what, 10 years from now, when you look at those pictures, you're going to be like, damn, I was hot. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's true. It's true. Damn, I was hot. Damn, I looked happy. Damn, we were having fun.
Exactly.
And also, like, we are going to get pictures. We have a photographer. She's amazing. But it's also really funny that I'm sort of like, what are we going to do with all these pictures? Like, why are we going to have all of these pictures?
I know.
So, yeah, it's not even like they're going to print like two.
It's actually so funny. I'm sure that the pictures are such a burden. They're weighing so heavily. They're sitting on the shoulders of all women who have been married, those pictures.
Oh, my God.
It's what do we do with them?
Where do they go? It's also like, it is important. You do want great pictures. And I guess the point is you get like 500 pictures so that you can have three favorites. But it's also like, yeah, the percentage of mental space it takes up before and after, the percentage of budget it takes up is
so expensive.
Fucking crazy. But it's also like, well, yeah, you have to do it. And then you have to care about it more than anything, because pictures last forever.
I mean,
your memories of the moment will fade. Pictures, items. It's really crazy.
Unless you're like pitching yourself for like a Vogue wedding or like an Elle wedding spread or something. Yeah. But even that is like not going to be satisfying.
No.
Even that isn't satisfying. It's not enough. It's an endless pit. Speaking of black holes.
It really is. It's an endless pit. And I gotta find a way to stay out of that pit. And I'm doing pretty well, but the pit is there. I see it. I see the pit. It's like when I went to the Grand Canyon and at night I stood at the edge and looked over and you could see nothing. It's just blackness and you feel like you're falling even though you know you're standing firmly on the ground and you're not going to fall into the Grand Canyon. It's like it's right there, you know?
It's when I saw Top Gun with you. Felt the same way?
Same way.
The same thing.
Yeah, so you know it. You know the feeling. Oh, so that's a little scary, but it's okay. Because it's fun and we're having fun.
We're having
fun. And you'll be here. And so I'm going to just be so happy.
And also, you're just having a big party at the end of the day. If you want to have a party to renew your vows, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you do it again.
Do it again.
Doesn't have to be the last time you guys have a big party to celebrate your love. Doesn't have to be the last time.
You're right.
We so don't do that.
Every day is a party to celebrate our love, really, when you think about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Every single day. Okay, we got there. It's going to be great. But another scary thing I did this week is I watched the scary movie for this podcast. Again, Sammy's not here, so had to do it. And you better believe I picked a 90-minute movie.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, yes, she did. I picked a classic, really, that we had not yet done, which is John Carpenter's The Fog.
Ooh, John Carpenter. She loves John Carpenter.
I do love John Carpenter. And I'm excited to talk about it with you. The Fog came out in 1980. It was directed by John Carpenter, written by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. Starring Adrian Barbeau, Jamie Lee Curtis, John Houseman, Janet Leigh, and Hal Holbrook. Do you know anything about The Fog, Henley?
No.
Anything
at all? No, I really don't know anything, except I can imagine a fog does sinister things.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. You nailed it. It is John Carpenter's theatrical follow-up to Halloween. I think he did some TV movies in between, but this is his next big movie.
Okay.
Again, a crisp 90-minute runtime.
We love it.
The Fog has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 55% on Metacritic, and a 6.8 on IMDb. So, you know, Just
pretty good.
Pretty standard. Pretty much what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
It had a budget of $1.1 million and a box office of $21.3
million. Wow.
So, pretty good. Jamie Lee Curtis, man.
And John Carpenter.
A match made in heaven. I think that this was her follow-up big role from Halloween, because she had trouble getting cast in things after Halloween, apparently.
That's frustrating.
And this is a very different role for her. A little more provocative. Although, really, I think that's just because she has sex at one point, which we don't even see. But I think for 1980, it was like, whoa! She's not a kid. She's having sex. Although she was 22 years old, so... she's still pretty young.
Interesting.
But she's also, Janet Leigh is her mother. Janet Leigh of Psycho fame.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in this movie together. And that doesn't happen. It's the only time that happens until Halloween H2O.
Yes.
Which is also John Carpenter.
Whoa. Okay, wait. Real quick about Jamie Lee Curtis.
Please.
Speaking of, I just saw that she made a plea to musicians to have matinee shows, and that really spoke to me. As you know, you might remember when I went to go see Haim, and it was just simply too late for me.
Too late. especially this garbage of, actually, it starts like 2 hours later than you think it starts.
100%. You have an opener. The actual band doesn't go on to like 10:30 p.m. Like, I need to be in bed.
What is up with musicians being late night? What's up with that?
Being night owls. Come on.
What? Just because you play music, you don't like to sleep? What is that?
I don't know. I don't agree with it. I don't support it. I fully support this idea of matinee music.
Matinee music. I mean, not for me. I'll just spend my afternoon some other way. But for others, I support it as well.
Yeah, I'm way more likely to go see a concert if it's earlier in the day. But yeah. I'm just speaking for myself. Anyway, go on. Sorry to interrupt.
No, I love that. I love that point. That's an important. We need to get more people in on this movement.
Mm-hmm.
For matinee shows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess I should just get into some trivia.
Yes,
about
please.
This freaking movie. They did do a remake of this movie in 2005, and it has a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that one didn't do so hot.
4%?
4%.
That's
4%.
Astonishingly low. I'm
extremely
curious.
Low. Almost as low as it gets.
It's so low that it makes me interested, that it piques my interest.
Yeah. I will say this is like, so the Carpenter movies that I have seen are, actually, I've not enough. I need to see more. The Fog, The Thing, which I love, and Halloween. And this one's like, this is a pretty silly movie. There's some spooky stuff and it's like very cool and very Carpenter. But I think The Thing is much, much scarier.
Mm-hmm.
I even find Halloween scarier, to be honest. So I can see why, if you are attempting to remake this and you don't have all of the like style and interest and point of view of John Carpenter, that it would be like, what are we doing here? Also, Carpenter did the score, as he does for his movies. It's that very like ding 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 ding, ding, like synthy sort of keyboardy, and it's fucking awesome. So again, I just don't think you can do this if you're not John Carpenter. So thank God he did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a little bit of trivia. This is just something that I was like, wow, I'm really impressed by all of the people that this trivia involves, which is that, so Carpenter co-wrote and co-produced this movie with Deborah Hill, who he was romantically involved with, I suppose, until they actually made this movie, I guess, because right before this movie he married Adrienne Barbeau, the star of this movie, and then they all continued to make the movie together. So I'm just like, what was that social dynamic like?
Yikes.
Did it all end on good terms? Are we just like, yeah man, go do your thing or what? I don't know, but pretty interesting to me. Tom Atkins' character's name is Nick Castle, which is the name of the original actor who played Michael Myers in Halloween. I just thought that was fun.
That's confusing.
And it is a little bit confusing. Hey, forget I ever said it.
That's the only thing I'll be able to think about for the rest of the episode.
Nick Castle.
I thought that was an actress. Actually, it's a real person and a fake person.
Oh my God. Wait, what movie is this? Yeah, just too confusing.
Also,
just let it go.
Just Also, just one more thought on Deborah Hill. I think it also is like sad and frustrating whenever there's a really famous man who also there's another woman that no one has ever heard of. And it's like, I don't know how, yeah. what else she was involved in. So I don't know anything about Deborah Hill, but it's like, man, you know, never heard the name Deborah Hill before. Certainly heard the name John Carpenter a lot. Like, I wonder yeah. how involved she was with anything he created. Could be nothing. Could be meaningless. But
that's a great. It's a great point. I mean, it is, does say she was best known for her professional partnership with John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but also, sadly, she died of cancer when she was in her 50s. So she also just maybe didn't get to have as long of a career and legacy. Looks like she was just really in on the Halloween movies. So again, like they must have had a good relationship, even though it no longer was a romantic relationship.
Okay.
Which I'm like, good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
So.
Hell yeah.
You know what? We support it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
John Carpenter originally intended to give this movie a PG rating.
PG.
So there's very little blood shown. They were really trying to get a PG rating, and it did end up getting an R rating.
Well, oh, was this before PG-13?
Was this I think before it was. PG-13? I think it was yes. before. Because didn't that come about? Didn't we discover that came about in like the 90s?
What movie was it? Movie that made, it's a really funny movie, I feel like. Maybe it made PG-13. Indiana Jones and then Gremlins. Indiana Jones
that's
and the Temple
right
of Doom.
Okay, so in the 80s but yes. Yes, so that it just jumped to because it doesn't feel like an R-rated movie, but I can see why they thought it's not a PG movie. So
got it.
There were a lot of reshoots done after the first screening for John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were like, this movie does not work, and also executives told them it wasn't scary enough, so they had to add in some stuff to make it scarier and more gruesome, which I think is what, yeah, ended up giving it that R rating. And I'll talk about what those are when we get there. But in the, in a scene at the end, so the fog plays heavily in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene at the end where they were not going to be able to get the fog to like roll out the way they wanted, like dissipate. So they had to shoot it in a way that it could be played in reverse. Because it was actually the fog coming up.
Okay, got it.
So Adrian Barbeau had to perform parts of that scene knowing it would be reversed.
Oh, that's
which is
confusing.
Really interesting. Yeah. That would be difficult, but I
that
you know
also
it doesn't seem like
brain.
It when you watch it. So, mm-hmm. I know. Don't even think about it. Forget I said.
I forgot already.
And Adrian Barbeau got the lead of this movie. She has one scene with her son. One scene with two, spoiler alert, ghosts. And other than that, all of her scenes were by herself with no direct on-screen interaction with any other characters.
Holy shit.
And once I read that trivia, I was like, oh yeah, I guess she's always alone. Which is just interesting.
A one-woman show.
It's a one-woman show. Well, there are scenes with other actors, with other people, but she talks on the phone to people. She's just up there all alone.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Wow. Wait, you saying that they're ghosts also reminds me of another scary thing which has just started happening, which is that Silas now is obsessed with ghosts.
Ooh, cool. Do you know why?
So I honestly don't know exactly why. I think that he's seen pictures of ghosts, you know, like a white sheeted ghost in books and asks what they are and thinks they're kind of scary. And now his interest is piqued. But it means that he now goes into a room and he goes, ah, there's a ghost. There's a ghost. He'll run up the stairs and he go, ah, there's a ghost. There's a ghost. And then he turns around and he goes, it's a friendly ghost. And then he goes, hi, ghost. How are you? Has
oh,
like a full conversation.
My God. Henley, is it because he's seen a picture of a ghost and got interested? Or is it because there are ghosts in your house?
I've been thinking about this so much because I'm like, this is the classic beginning. It's Conjuring
like,
all over
Like, maybe
again.
He's interested in ghosts because he saw a ghost.
But it's a friendly ghost. It's a friendly
they
ghost.
They always say that to children. That's what an unfriendly ghost would say. Like, sorry.
It's friendly. And also, They're good at conversing, these ghosts. He has long conversations with them.
Oh, my God, Henley. No. Okay. It's getting more and more suspicious over there.
I know.
Again, you do live at a graveyard.
At a graveyard. I know. On top of where Silas
likes to play on the gravestones.
I know. I know. The other thing he does is when he's in the bathtub, he takes a washcloth and he puts his hand up in it and he goes, "Ooh, I'm a ghost. Ooh, I'm a ghost." And he has it so swim around the bathtub.
And that's probably really upsetting the malevolent spirit ghost in your house to be made fun of in this way.
And then he pretends like it's a little puppet and he talks with it. He has a conversation with the ghost. I know. I hope it's not belittling any spirits. We treat ghosts respectfully like we would treat anyone else.
Yeah, if any reasonable ghost would understand that Silas is a toddler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's like fine, mm-hmm, probably. Mm-hmm.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's probably fine. Yeah.
I'll let you know if his soul gets corrupted, though. I'll keep.
Yeah, please make sure to let me know if that happens. I would. Mm-hmm. I need to be kept informed of that. We also are not going to watch the trailer because Sammy's not here, and I don't know how to do it. So sorry, no trailer. No trailer reaction.
Fine with me.
Sammy will be back soon. I am sorry about that. I also want to say that this movie takes place on April 21st, which is a thing I did not know when I picked it for this week's movie. We are recording on April 21st. Today is April 21st, a.k.a. Fog Day.
What?
I had no idea. And the movie started, and we watched it a few days ago, and they're starting the story on the 21st of April. And I was like, oh, that's funny. That's like close to today. And then I did the math and was like, we're recording on April 21st. What the fuck?
That's weird. That's really weird.
Something in the air.
Was it the ghosts? Were the ghosts, they're like, twinkle, twinkle, we exist.
I'm not so worried about these ghosts, to be completely honest. But
I'm not worried about my ghosts either.
Great. That's great. I did learn... Our friends over at Physical Therapy Movie Podcast also covered the fog this week because they knew that it about the date of the fog. Mm-hmm. One of the hosts of that podcast, our friend Sam, does an annual fog day where he'll they get a smoke machine and fill their apartment with fog and make I'll give you more details about the movie that'll make it make sense. But I'm like, you know, I love atmosphere. You know, I love a theme. I'm like, wait, I want to have a fog day.
It's just like your rain day.
It's just like my rain day, but with fog.
Mm-hmm.
But so today's fog day. Happy fog day, Henley.
Thank you. Wow, the day just got so much better. Yeah. I know that it's actual fog day.
I know. It's very exciting. Okay, well, then let's freaking get into it.
I want to know. I'm curious.
Great, great, great. Here we go. Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look, we got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite, quite nice. And also, the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for Vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes. Variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the US, and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daybblinds.com/too scary.
We open on a quote. Text on a black screen. Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh my God.
And I gotta be honest, I don't understand why that quote's there. On my rewatch of it with Joel, that comes up, and after having seen the whole movie, I was like, wait, what does that have to do with anything? And Joel was like, I honestly don't know. So, you know, atmosphere, but also, I don't know. If someone knows why that quote is relevant to this movie, please let me know. But then we see some kids sitting by a campfire, and it was a huge jump scare for me because it looks like two kids sitting next to each other huddled up in a blanket. And then as you look closer, you see there is a third child there in between them. And it really spooked me. Ooh. I just was not expecting there to be a third child. I don't think it's meant to be a scary moment, but I was like, Jesus Christ.
There's so many kids.
It's like when I turn around and there's like a cat staring at me. I'm like, what the fuck? Why are you there? But there's an old timey sailor telling them a group of children a ghost story, saying, 100 years ago, on the 21st of April, there was a ship out at sea at Spivey Point, and it got, it was caught in a dense fog, but out in the distance it saw light. It was lost. The ship didn't know where to go, but it saw this light in the distance, and, you know, thinking it was a lighthouse or something calling to them, they aimed for it, but it turned out it was a campfire on the rocks, and they crashed their ship into the rocks, and they all fell into the sea and fell to their deaths. And legend has it that when the fog returns to Antonio Bay, the men will rise up and seek the fire that led them to their deaths. The fog.
Ooh, okay.
It's also important to note that this movie takes place in Antonio Bay, a fictional town in California. So he says, like, right where we are, when the clock's, it's 11:55, it's like when the clock strikes midnight on April 21st, the men will come back to avenge their deaths. And then the clock strikes midnight, baby. And we're doing our opening credits and we're going through this sleepy California town. We go into an old church. We're just seeing this old, lovely church, and we're hearing a woman's voice over the radio. She's like a radio DJ, and she's saying, "Hello, Antonio Bay." She's being very, like, sexy radio voice. "Hello, Antonio Bay. It's the witching hour, 12 to 1. And I'm going to be here all night to take you through with some great tunes." And we see a priest, Father Malone, drinking alone in his office. And we see, you know, it's past midnight. And all of a sudden, a big stone slab falls off from the wall, revealing a journal that was hidden in a little nook. And so he takes the journal out. He opens it and it says it's from the year 1880, 100 years ago. And on the page he opens it to has a quote that says, "Midnight till one belongs to the dead. May the Lord deliver us." And then we are cutting across town and we're seeing different scenes of things happening, and weird stuff is happening all around town. In one area, we're seeing all the payphones in a row. They're all ringing and their coins are rattling inside the payphones. We go inside of a convenience store and we see all of a sudden all the glass water bottles and drinks and stuff inside the case start shaking almost as if there's like an earthquake happening, but it's just them and they're making a like clattery noise. A bunch of car alarms go off at once. We see a dog barking at the door of his house, not really knowing what's going on. Throughout all this, we keep hearing, her name is Stevie, Stevie's voice on the radio. "Hello, Antonio Bay. Hope the night's treating you well. Here's another tune to get you through the night." And it's all like really nice, cool, old-timey like jazz music, which is apparently because the rights for jazz music were much more affordable than other genres of music. But it, I think, sets like a really cool tone to this town. It's like it's like the only radio station in town, and they just like play jazz music from sounds like the fucking 40s. And we see a man driving down the road alone, and he drives past a young woman hitchhiking, pulls over to let him into her his car. We're nervous about this. This is a young Jamie Lee Curtis. She gets in. She looks a little, she thanks him for picking her up, but she does look a little scared. She says, "Look, this is my first time hitchhiking, and I just got to take care of myself. So I just have to know, are you weird?" And he says, "Yes. Yes, I am weird." And she says, "Oh, thank God you're weird. I was so worried you were going to be normal." And they're hitting it off and they're flirting and it's great. She's not going to get murdered by this man, but boy, oh boy, did I think she was.
Okay.
He offers her a beer. This is 1980. He's driving and drinking out of a big old tall boy. Mm-hmm. She drinks from his can, just truly not worried about being murdered at all. But they're having a great time. And she tells him, actually, he's her 13th ride. She's been hitchhiking all the way up from, I think, San Diego. And he says, "Oh boy, 13th ride. That's unlucky." And then all the windows in the car shatter. All the windows, windshield, everything. They pull over, totally frazzled. What was that? And then they're like, "We better get going." And then they don't get out of the car. They don't check anything. They just keep driving.
Not a totally big untouched, phew. totally untouched by the glass that shattered.
Totally
everywhere.
Untouched, not hurt at all. They don't wonder what could have caused it. They just go like, "Okay, let's keep it going." And for the rest of the movie, when this car is driven around, it has no windows, no windshield, nothing. We go to the radio station, which is in the lighthouse on the coast. This is coastal California town. It reminds me of like Morro Bay or something. I think they did shoot it up in the Bay Area. But that's the vibe.
I want to work in a radio station in a lighthouse in coastal California. Are you
I know it is nice,
me?
But I will say there were so many stairs she had to take to get up into this lighthouse that I was like, and I think the trivia is something like it's like 225.
Holy fucking shit!
It's like a lot. It's too many stairs. So just keep that in mind.
Never mind.
But yes, so the radio station is a lighthouse above Spivey Point, and we see Stevie. She's, you know, announcing, here's the next song for you, Antonio Bay. And then she goes off the air and her phone rings. She picks it up and she's got still a sexy voice, but her more normal voice. She answers it. It's the local weatherman. It's clear they have not like TV weatherman, but the guy who like works in the weather station.
Meteorologist.
Let's call him a meteorologist. Yeah, that is what he is. Weatherman. It's clear that they have a flirtation, but they don't know each other actually in real life. They just like he calls her and gives her weather updates, which she says over her radio broadcast. Okay. But they're flirty. She's a huge babe, and he is giving me the creepiest vibes this whole movie. But she doesn't really know him personally, and they're just she tells her like you're just a voice over the phone, and he says and you're just a voice over the radio, but. He tells her, wanted to let you know, there's a fog bank rolling in and there's a ship about 15 miles out on the water. It's called the Seagrass. So I just wanted to give you that info. She says, thanks so much. And she goes back on the air and says, hello out there, Antonio Bay. And to the men on the Seagrass out on the water, there's a fog bank rolling in. Just wanted to let you know about that and, you know, keep listening right here for more information.
I don't know. It's I like... think you should moonlight as a sexy radio host.
Thank you so much.
You should be the next Delilah.
I don't want to moonlight as anything other than being asleep in my bed.
I know. Same.
It's just, you know, I ain't going to do a late night job. Mm-mm. Sorry. But this town is a small town and the vibe is like, it's very funny. Literally everyone, the whole movie, it only listens to this one radio station and does always have this radio station on. Like, it's on at the bar. It's on this boat. It's on, like, this is the only thing people listen to. They are just really dedicated to, it's a KAB, Antonio Bay. So everybody listens to KAB. That's just what they do. So we cut to the Seagrass. It's three men. They're pounding beers. They hear Stevie over the radio and they're all talking about how hot Stevie is, and one of them's like, I saw her in the grocery store, you would like to meet her. We learn that she has a kid and that she owns the radio station, and one of them is looking out the window saying there's no fog out there, what is she talking about? And then all of a sudden we see fog appear in the distance and it looks like it's glowing. We see like a bright green light coming through the fog and the guy's like, what the heck is that? Another guy comes over to look out the window and they're like, what's going on out there? And just then their generator blows. Gotta go figure it out. It's all dark now. One of the men goes below deck to sort of check things out. The other two go up top to look around them and see what might be going on. It's getting chilly all of a sudden. And the two men up top all of a sudden see coming up to their boat. First, they see a mast and a tattered flag. And then, oh, my goodness, it's like an old piratey ship. What the heck is this? And they're calling out, hello, who's there? What's going on? And then through the fog, all of a sudden on there, oh, there's fog surrounding them now, fog everywhere. And they see all of a sudden the silhouettes of two men with big hooks in one hand and swords standing still on the deck. And they say, hello, hello, what do you want? And they get stabbed and hooked to death many times. Oh! We have a third man below deck who's not hearing any of this, doesn't know what's going on. But it's pitch darkness. It's a very cool shot of we can just see, like, through the green light of the fog, like, water reflection on his face, you know? Like, that, like, ripply light. It's a very beautiful shot. And he hears someone coming down there and is like, hello, guys, what's going on? We see it is another of these mummy pirates. And this pirate immediately goes, chook, chook, two quick stabs through each eye socket.
Oh, these pirates mean business.
They fucking mean business.
What was up with that pirate in the beginning, too? Like, why was he talking to those three kids? I mean,
He was just an old seafaring man.
What's the difference between that and a pirate, huh?
Plundering?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so what's this like movie trying to say? Yeah, what's this movie trying to say about sailors? Is all I'm getting at.
Interesting. Let's hold that thought. I actually don't know if there's an answer. Then we cut back to Stevie's radio tower lighthouse, and the weatherman Dan calls her again and says, "All right, I think actually, hey," he always calls her sweeter. "Hey, sweetheart, I think I was wrong about that fog bank. It's moving west, so I think it's actually going to miss that seagrass. So I gave you the wrong information." And she says, "Huh, my gauges must be wrong. I see that the wind is blowing due east. What kind of fog moves against the wind?" And he says, "I don't know what to tell you." Then she hangs up. She's looking out her window. It's like 360 windows. We're in a lighthouse. And she looking out at the fog. And she can see it all in the distance. And then it disappears.
Ooh.
She's staring like, huh, what is that? Cut to Jamie Lee and the guy who picked her up. His name is Nick. Postcoital. They are in bed. Ooh. I just feel like it's important to call out, yes, it was 1980. At the time of this movie, Jamie Lee Curtis was 22 and the actor playing Nick was 45. And ew. They do look it. She looks like a child and he looks 45, and ew. It's not a thing at all. But it was a thing for me the whole time.
Yeah.
But they are, you know, they're just laying in bed, kind of getting to know each other. He does say, "Can I ask you a question?" And she says, "Yeah." And he says, "What's your name?"
Oh,
jeez. Oh, man. They're just really, what a pair. She's telling him she was hitchhiking up to Vancouver just to start her life for herself. I don't know. It's not really important, but that's what she was doing. But just then we hear someone knocking at the door, and it's a very like, let's see if you can hear this.
Kind of.
It's can't just really like, okay, well, I'm not going to try to redo it. It's just very slow and like knock, knock.
A weird knock.
Like not a normal human knock. Not the way that a person knock. Does, no. And it's also like, it sounds a little bit metallic. Like, what are they using to knock on this door?
Like a hook, maybe?
But it could be a hook. In fact, we cut to outside the door and we do just see a hook banging against that door.
yep, there it is.
And he gets up, Nick gets up to... go and see who might be there. He's taking a minute. He has to, you know, put his clothes back on. And Jamie Lee's like, "Who is that?" And just as he's getting up to go to the door, his clock, the glass on his clock shatters. And we see that it is 1 a.m. And we hear Stevie signing off on the radio saying, "The witching hour is over. That's it for me. Broadcast, I'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. This is Stevie signing off from KAB. Nick opens the door and there's nobody there. Nobody there. Everything's fine. Next morning, we see a little kid running on the beach. He's just looking around for things. He sees on some rocks a bit ahead a gold coin. And so he's like, "Oh, hell yeah, I gotta go get that gold coin." Just before he goes to pick it up, a wave sloshes over the rock. And as it pulls back, that gold coin has turned into a piece of driftwood. And the driftwood has the word Dane carved into it. Like carved like intentionally, like as it's like a sign or perhaps the name of a ship. He's all excited. He takes it home and he goes into his mom's room. Mom, wake up. Look what I found on the beach. And his mom is Stevie. She's very tired. The woman was working until 1 a.m. You know, we know the drill. And so she wakes up and he says, "Mom, look at this wood I found on the beach." And she takes a look at it. Cool. He asks her if he can have a stomach pounder and a Coke. She says, maybe after lunch. And I have no idea what that means. What's a stomach pounder?
No idea. What? Never heard that
why
before.
Is it a thing you would have after you have lunch? Hard to
beats
say.
Me.
It beats the hell me. Out of me. Beats the hell out of me. But she just takes this wood. She kind of looks at it. Nobody really thinks much of it, but, you know, it did used to be a coin, so that's kind of weird. But, you know, she doesn't, her son says, and she's like, yeah, sure, sure, whatever. You're like six, so you're full of lies. Next morning, we see Nick and Jamie Lee. I think her character name is Beth, but I am probably going to call her Jamie Lee the whole recap.
Great, great, great. Oh, I'm good with that.
But they go to the dock, and Nick is asking the guy at the docks about the seagrass. I guess this is, it's either his ship or these were his friends. Either way, the ship should have been back by now, and it's not. So he's like, you know, the guy at the dock says, you want me to take you out, and we'll go look for him? And he says, yes. And he asks Jamie, you want to come with me? And she's like, sure. They're like, they act like a full couple from here on out. And it is so strange to me. She is like nuzzling into his chest. Like, I just, it's so bizarre. I think it's very, very strange. But it just is what it is. They're a couple now, whatever.
Yeah. Can count this amongst your list of meet cutes, you know? How did you guys meet? How'd you guys meet? Hitchhiking,
and then a bunch of crazy shit started happening in our town. Mm-hmm. We cut to this woman, Mrs. Williams, who's Janet Lee. She is the chairperson for the town's 100th birthday celebration, which is that day. She's there with her assistant, Sandy, who is also in Halloween, which is fun. And they are planning the celebration for the town, and Mrs. Williams is reading off a list of things that need to get done to her assistant. And they have a very funny dynamic where the dynamic is very much this bitch between both of them, but it also is somehow charming.
Okay, okay.
Janet Lee, Mrs. Williams, at one point says to her, Sandy, you can be a very annoying person at times, but you do keep me together. She also says at one point, you're the only person who can make yes, ma'am sound like screw you. It's really an interesting little back and forth. Sure. They are then driving in their car to go run the next errand for tonight's celebration. And Mrs. Williams tells Sandy that her husband, who was out last night on the seagrass, still hasn't come home. Mm. And the strangest thing happened at midnight. Her dog started barking out at the ocean and wouldn't stop barking. Sandy tells her, at midnight, my car alarm went off for no reason. That's so strange that these weird things happened at midnight. Meanwhile, Nick and Jamie, they find the seagrass out on the water. They board it. No one on board. The generator is filled with water, but the deck looks dry. All the glass on the boat is shattered. Jamie Lee says, just like with your car. I say, huh, what is going on? Cut back to Mrs. Williams and Sandy, and they are going to the old church that we saw at the beginning to talk to Father Malone about giving the benediction at the town celebration that night. When they get there, he is rattled by something. He says, I found this journal last night, and he wants to read to them what he found. And so he reads from the journal a story written by his grandfather, Father Malone, about the founding of this town, which is 100 years ago. And the story is that James Blake, who we learn was a very wealthy man who had leprosy and lived on a leper colony, is what they call it in the movie, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. had approached the Father Malone Sr. about wanting to move his colony to Antonio Bay, and was going to give... basically wanted the Father Malone's permission to like settle there with his men. And I think the incentive was like, I have a lot of money, so I'll be able to give money to the town if you let us move there. And Father Malone's journal says that, you know, he was very torn between his desire for mercy and his disgust at the idea of having men with this condition living in his town.
Oh, interesting.
So he says that he and five others come up with a plan to kill Blake and all of his men and steal their money.
Oh, my God.
And he doesn't feel great about this, but he sees himself knowing that the money will be used to build this town and make a good life for lots of other people.
Oh, no. So these men are coming back.
They might be coming back
for revenge, baby.
And he says, on April 21st, the deed is done. We set a fire on the rocks to lure the ship in and were aided by a heavy fog that seemed heaven sent. The plan worked. The men crashed on the rocks and fell to their deaths. And I don't feel great about it, but oh well.
I don't feel great. What can you do? What can you do? Dear diary, I murdered a lot of people today and I don't feel great about it.
TTYL, Father Malone. We cut back to the seagrass. And again, we've searched the whole ship. The men aren't there. And Nick and Jamie Lee are sitting in one of the rooms on the ship. And Jamie Lee says, you know, I think I'm bad luck, which I'm like, this is where she's so 22 to me, where it's like, honey, this is not about you.
Yeah.
I think I'm the reason why you can't find your friends. It's like, this is a real adult crisis. Like, men are missing and let's not make this about you. But he says, I don't believe in luck, good or bad, but there is this one story my dad told me one time, which was, I remember, it was pretty strange. My dad was out on the water one night fishing, and a ship approached their boat, and they boarded the boat, but there was nobody on it. It was completely empty, but there was a table set with food on it, a steaming hot cup of coffee. It was as if people had just been there, but there was no one to be found. And my dad found on that ship a gold coin minted in Spain in the 1800s. And he took it home. He put it in his pocket. And when he came home to tell us the story and show us the coin was gone. And I always wondered what had happened with that ship. And just as he's telling that story, a dead body falls onto Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, my God.
It's the guy who had his eyeballs stabbed out. So this, like, eyeless, bloody, whole corpse falls onto her. Cut to back at the church. Father Malone is asked, Miss Williams asks, when did you find this journal, Father? And he says, I found it last night at midnight, the same time the conspirators planned the death of Blake and his men. And Sandy and Miss Williams turn to each other, and Sandy says, midnight, that's the same time that weird stuff was happening to us. And Father Malone says, we're cursed. We're all cursed. Sandy and Miss Williams are sort of like, I don't know. That's probably no big deal. Miss Williams says, hey, Father, maybe don't give the benediction tonight. I think that we're good. And he, you know, is staring out the window. We're all cursed. He's very troubled by this. And they're sort of like, okay, well.
See you later.
We see Stevie going to work at the lighthouse. So we know it must be getting close to 6 p.m. We have you see her go up just so many stairs. She gets up there. She's settling in. She's listening to on tape some KAB promos, I guess, deciding which ones she's going to use. And she brought the piece of driftwood that her son found, and she sets it up on top of her tape player. And she's looking out the window, drinking her coffee, listening to these promos. And we see the piece of driftwood all of a sudden start to get sopping wet. And it's dripping, and it's dripping water down onto the tape player. And it starts, the tape player starts fritzing out and sparking. And the voices that are saying, you know, KAB, your source of music for Antonio Bay, starts turning really sinister. And it's saying, wait,
it's really good.
I have to find out what it is. Okay, so the voice all of a sudden says, damn them all. Oh, and then the message on the wood changes from saying Dane to six must die, and then it bursts into flames. She turns around, she sees it, she immediately has a fire extinguisher right there with her. I'm like, this woman's prepared, good for you. She extinguishes it, she goes back to look at it, and it's back to a regular piece of driftwood that says Dane. It doesn't look like it ever caught fire. Very strange. Some might say way too strange.
Mm-hmm. Too much to continue on like nothing has happened.
Precisely. So she calls her son at home, and this is the 80s. He's home alone at this point, but his babysitter does come over while she's on the phone with him. She's, I guess, their neighbor. Her name is Mrs. Kobritz. She's an older woman, probably in her 70s. Stevie calls and she says, Andy, where did you find that piece of wood? So I told you I found it on the beach. It used to be a gold coin and then it turned into a piece of wood. And she says, Andy, don't pick up anything else off the beach. And please promise me you're not going to leave the house tonight. Oh, Mom. Andy, promise me. Okay. She hangs up. She's clearly freaked out, but she's like, okay, gotta get to work. Steals herself. Clicks the on-air button.
Hi, Antonio Bay. It's Stevie here, and it's the happy 100th birthday, Antonio Bay. The celebration is happening in Town Square tonight, and hopefully you'll all be there, and I'll be here to keep you company until that time.
Puts on some jazz music. Great. We see we're back. Now we're at the coroner's office, and he's examining the body that was found on the seagrass. And he pulls Nick aside to talk to him about it. They're like in this medical examination room. It's not a morgue, but it's like more looks more like a doctor's office. And so the coroner pulls Nick aside to tell him what he has seen and leaves Jamie Lee sitting in the room with the corpse just like covered on the table. And the coroner tells Nick, this body has been underwater for a long time. This body has signs of having been underwater for like at least a month. His lungs are filled with fluid. There's seaweed in his clothes. There's silt under his fingernails. But he says, I just saw, his name is Dick something. I just saw Dick 3 days ago. There's no way he'd been underwater for a month. Why does he look like that? Also, why are his eyes stabbed out? And they're very confused by this. Like, how can a man drown when he's on top of a ship? Like, none of it makes sense. And while they're talking, we see the corpse hand come out from under the sheet.
Oh, here we go.
Go over to the medical tray next to him. Pick up a scalpel. Oh, Jamie God. Lee's not noticing a damn thing. We see one foot get onto the ground. Other foot get onto the ground. He stands up. We see him approaching, coming up behind Jamie Lee. Goes for her. Misses because he has no eyes. Falls to the ground, all the noise. She screams. Nick in the corner come back in. Everything's fine. The corpse is back to being a corpse, completely lifeless on the ground. But with that scalpel hand, he's carved into the ground the number 3.
Okay. I thought it was 6. Now
well,
3?
3 have died.
Oh, 3 have died already, right? Now we're down to 3. Okay.
We're down to 3. So we're seeing darkness fall over mm-hmm. Antonio Bay. Just mm-hmm. cutting through the streets, we're seeing, okay, it is nighttime. The celebration for the town is about to start, but we see Nick and the sheriff are talking to Mrs. Williams, and they're telling her, we found the seagrass. We did not find your husband. We still got to go out and look for him. But, you know, obviously it's not looking good. And she says, you know, well, I need to go out and speak at the town celebration. And Sandy says, Miss Williams, I really don't think you should. And she says, well, the chairperson can't miss the celebration. So I think it's exactly what I ought to do. She goes out. Nick hears Stevie's radio station is playing in the bar that they're in. And she says, got an, you know, bulletin from the Coast Guard. They found the seagrass, but no news about the men on board. And I'll keep you posted when I get any more news. And for everyone else, I hope you steer clear of any fog you might see out in the water. And Nick hears this and thinks, I got to give her a call. And so he calls the radio station. He says, hi, you don't know me. My name is Nick, but I'm one of the men who found the seagrass. And you mentioned something about fog last night. And she says, immediately just trusts him and tells him everything. And says, yeah, you know, it's the strangest thing. I know it doesn't sound right, but I saw the fog last night. I saw it disappear. But before it disappeared, it looked like it was glowing. And, you know, it might be completely unrelated, but my son also found a piece of driftwood earlier that
spontaneously combusted.
Something doesn't seem right. And so Nick decides he's going to go to the lighthouse to see her, find out what else she knows. And we see in the lighthouse, she has a perfect vantage point, basically of the whole town. So she can see the fog coming mm-hmm. in. So I think Nick's like, all right, let's go there. And of course, Jamie Lee comes with him because they are a full-fledged couple. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family-friendly, low-carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready-to-eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary and use code TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code TOOSCARY so they know I sent you.
All right, you guys, I'm here again to talk to you about Skims, except this time not about their underwear, this time about their t-shirts. Have you guys tried their t-shirts? Because I hadn't until recently, and holy shit, I have been on the quest to find the perfect t-shirt for my entire adult life. And little did I know, they were just hiding at skims.com. So I have their cotton jersey long sleeve t-shirt in kind of this like deep blue, gorgeous color. And it's a very form-fitting t-shirt that's extremely flattering. I've worn it over and over and over again since I got it, and it really holds up in the wash. You can just throw it in the washing machine, holds up, keeps its shape. The quality of the fabric is so good. I also have the boyfriend t-shirt. That one's so cozy, more relaxed. I just am obsessed with them, and now I want all of them. So I will slowly be amassing my collection of Skims t-shirts for the rest of my goddamn life. Anyway, so I really can't recommend them enough. Go to skims.com to shop them, and they're available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. Plus, you get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that Too Scary Didn't Watch sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select Too Scary Didn't Watch in the drop-down menu that follows.
They start driving to the lighthouse. We cut to the weather station where Dan is showing up for work. He, you know, does his favorite thing, which is to give Stevie a call. Loves talking to her. He wants to tell her about. He sees another fog bank rolling in. Calls her. And Stevie, you know, is very freaked out about this and says, hold on, and puts him on hold and turns all her lights off so she can see the fog more clearly. And she does see fog in the distance and it's glowing. And so she's like, oh, no, oh, no. She gets on the radio and she says, I have an important bulletin. The fog is heading towards the weather station at whatever address, because the weatherman had said, meteorologist, I suppose, said, looks like the fog's heading this direction. It'll be outside my door in 5 minutes. So she says it over the radio. We see Nick and Jamie Lee hear it. And so they start driving there instead, because they're like, we got to figure out what's up with this fog. Back to Steve being on the phone with Dan. And she says, Dan, tell me where the fog is. What's happening now? And he says, oh, well, looks like it's right here. And he looks out and his windows are completely, this man is a meteorologist. This fog right. is unlike anything. It looks like a big smoke machine. It is like funneling through under the door, every pocket it can get through around the windows, filling the room like smoke, not like fog at all. And he's like, oh, yeah, pretty foggy.
It's like, cool.
And just as that's happening, his power goes out at the weather station. And he's like, oh man, someone must be playing a prank. And then he says, what's that glowing? Someone's out there flashing some lights in here.
Oh my God.
Stevie's freaking out. She's saying, Dan, stay away from the fog. Something's not right with the fog. And he's like, oh honey, don't even worry about it. I've seen fog my whole life. I'm a meteorologist. Just then we hear some hook-like knocking at his door. And he goes, oh, this prankster wants to come talk to me. Oh, my gosh. Hold on, sweetheart. I got to get the door. And she's like, Dan, don't get the door. Don't get the door.
You're going to die.
And he puts the phone down and he walks over to the door. He opens it. No one's really there. He sees a red glow now coming from outside. He walks out. Hello. And hook to the neck. Dan is dead. And over the phone, it's like we hear him dying and Stevie hears him dying and is now like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, this shit's real now.
This shit is real.
Yeah. We got to take this seriously. Stevie, yes. Save the town.
Stevie needs to save the town. And so she hangs up the phone. She looks out her window and she now sees the fog is rolling in to the town. She gets over the radio and she asks for the sheriff to give her a call at KAB. She says, I've got an important bulletin for the sheriff. Sheriff, please give me a call at KAB 555-2341. Call me at KAB. But as the sheriff hears this, he's at the celebration for the town, but one of his deputies comes up and whispers in his ear, the radio station that we all listen to, the lady's asking for you. So he slips back into the bar next door, gets on the payphone to call her. She picks up. Sheriff, he says, yes, what's going on? And as soon as they get on that phone, we see the fog rolling over some power lines or some phone lines and snap, snap, snap. All the phone lines go down.
No.
That fog is sneaky. We're hearing fog. Also, meanwhile, the ding, 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 dong, 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 the very like Carpenter music playing. Mm-hmm. We see the fog coming into the town. It hits the town power plant and we see zoom. All the power goes out in Antonio Bay.
Ooh, spooky.
Which includes the radio station.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
So Stevie looks out her window and sees that fog is heading straight for her house.
No.
So she runs down her many stairs and starts pumping her generator, pulling that cord, trying to get it going. It's not going. She's freaking out. She's like, come on. Cut to her house. We see that fog is coming in heavy. Mrs. Kobritz has the good sense to be scared and is like, this is weird. I don't like this. She tells Andy, we should close all the windows. We should close all the doors. Are the windows in your bedroom closed? Like, go check. And just as we're checking on those windows, we hear knock, knock.
No. Knock
on the door. And Mrs. Cobra says, Andy, go to your room. Go to your room and shut the door. So she has enough sense to do that, but she does for some reason feel as if she must open the door.
Oh, God.
So she's just shooing Andy away to his room. He finally turns around to head to his room the second she opens the door, and she immediately gets hooked and killed.
Oh, my God.
That's five. That's five down.
Oh, shit. And now they're going to try to kill the little boy? Why? There's so many adults to choose.
I don't think these pirates fucking care. But just then, Stevie is able to get her generator going. Oh, thank God. She runs back up the stairs and she gets on the radio and she screams, my son is trapped by the fog. Anybody who hears this, go to my address. 645 Beach Street. I don't know. Please. My son is trapped in the fog. You have to get my son out. We see Nick and Jamie Lee. They're in their car. They hear this on the radio. They pull a U-turn and they book it to her address. Great. But we see.
Oh, no.
At Andy's door, he's hiding in his room, and we see a hook start slashing through his door, breaking down that wood,
trying to get in.
It's fucked up. It's fucked up.
Spare the kid.
But, you know, just as this pirate is getting through this door, we see he's about to get in. Nick and Jamie Lee come. Nick walks around the house. He breaks through the window of Andy's room, picks Andy up through all of these shards of glass. Somehow,
no one cares
magically
about glass.
Glass is not dangerous in this world.
Doesn't exist in this universe. Nope.
Picks Andy up, gets him out of the room just in time. But they get into their car to drive away, and the car is trapped. The tires are trapped in mud. And so we're revving the gas, and they're just spinning. We're in the car. We're trying to drive away. And as we're trying to drive away, we see 3-4 pirates with hooks slowly approaching the car. And I mean slowly. Ugh. John Carpenter is obsessed with slow murderers. Mm-hmm. They are take Michael Myers and slow him down by like 50%. Like they are so slow. So they do manage to finally get the car going. Drive away just in the nick of time before the pirates can reach him. Over the radio, Stevie is saying, Andy, if you can hear this, I'm so sorry I couldn't come for you. I hope you're okay, and I hope you know why I need to stay here. Okay, Antonio Bay, the fog is moving in towards the city center. You know, she's now the one person who can save the town, you know? Mm-hmm. She also just simply wouldn't have gotten there in time. Too many stairs.
Right.
But she's announcing over the radio, the fog is now on every city street. It's heading towards the edges of town. The only safe place at this point that the fog has not gotten to is the old church. Head to the old church. If you can hear this, head to the old church.
Uh-oh.
We see Nick and Jamie Lee hear it. They're driving there. We see Mrs. Williams and Sandy have started. They've driven home. They're driving home from the celebration. Because at one point, the sheriff comes up to her and he's like, hey, I've been listening to the radio and I think we should probably end this celebration. The woman on the radio is losing her shit and I think maybe something's going on. So Mrs. Williams and Sandy are, you know, they're on their way home. They hear it and they're like, okay, I guess we gotta drive to the old church. And what is so funny to me is these are the only people who hear this radio broadcast and these are the only people who head to the church. Like, it's just them. Which no they're the only goes? People who matter at this point, but nobody else goes.
Okay. Also, probably smart because I feel like, wouldn't they hate the church the most? I mean, Father, what's his name?
I mean, you would think. Father Malone, you would think. Yeah. It's the last place that the fog hasn't reached, I suppose. Okay. And Stevie doesn't know the story about the pirates and the. All she knows is the fog is bad, you know? But and I guess everybody's power is out, so maybe these are the only people who hear it because they're listening to their car radios, you know? I don't know. Do radios use electricity at that time? No, probably not. It doesn't matter.
Probably not. But also, who cares?
So they go to the church, so now it's there for those four, no, five, I guess. Andy, Jamie Lee Curtis, Nick, Mrs. Williams, Sandy at the church, and Father Malone is there. So they get inside, and they head for the study, which is, I guess, the most secure room that they can find. But wouldn't you believe it, the fog is approaching the church. At the radio station, Stevie's looking out the windows, and she sees the fog has moved up, and it is going to reach her as well. She is also not safe from this fog. The tower is like there's like a little metal spiral staircase to the door, so from upstairs she hears hook knocking.
Oh boy.
At that door downstairs, she goes down to see if she can brace the door. She can't do it. She has to run up and she goes out the window and she's like hiding along the balcony. At the church, Mrs. Williams asks Father Malone to get the journal and see if there's any explanation to what might be happening, and they realize they put all their information they've all had together and realize 6 people have to die for the 6 conspirators that planned Blake's death. And they count off who they know has died. The 3 on the boat, Mrs. Kobritz, and the weatherman. So there's just one more. Just one more needs to die. Just as they're realizing this, another stone falls out of the wall, revealing a giant cross made of pure gold. And that this was the money they stole from Blake. They put it into a gold cross and hid it in the walls.
Sure.
Don't know how that serves anybody.
No.
But there you go. So Father Malone grabs that cross. Meanwhile, pirates are breaking through the windows of the study, trying to grab for the people inside. I mean, it's on. The death has reached them. But Father Malone, he walks out into the sanctuary, and it's filled with smoke, and we see a bunch of pirate mummy zombies in there staring at him. It's gorgeous. It looks like, this moment to me looks like a really, really great high school play of like a Greek tragedy, where it's like that kind of smoke, and it's like really well lit, and they're like standing in a really nice little formation. I was like, this would be a cool play. They all have glowing red eyes, by the way, these pirates.
Ooh.
And Father Malone stands in front of them, and he says, Blake, I have your gold. Take me, the grandson of Father Malone. I deserve to answer for his actions. So he is sacrificing himself on this cross.
Wow.
To the pirates.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Stevie has had to climb up onto the roof to try to get away from this pirate coming towards her. We see a hook come up onto the roof, followed by this pirate climbing up. She's backing away, trying to back away from him. When she gets, all of a sudden, we see a scary shot. Another pirate behind her we didn't know was there. He stabs her. She's able to grab his hook, but now she is fighting for her life on the slanted roof against two pirates. It is not looking good. We're cutting back and forth between that Father Malone with Blake. Other pirates are trying to kill the other people in the study. It's very tense. It's all happening. Blake walks up to Father Malone. He unsheathes his sword and he puts his hands on the cross. And the cross begins to glow so bright. And smoke is coming out from the cross. It looks like it's white hot. And he's touching the cross. Father Malone is holding the cross. And Stevie is on the lighthouse and she's fighting these two pirates. And oh my God, what's going to happen? And then just then the cross, there's an explosion. Father Malone falls back. Everybody else comes out into the sanctuary to see what's going on. We stand up. Pirates are gone. Cross is gone. Fog is receding.
Wow.
Fog is pulling away. Stevie looks up. Pirates are gone. Fog going away.
Wow.
They all come together. Oh my gosh.
We're safe?
I guess we're saved. Mm. Father Malone stands up. He's totally fine. I thought for sure he was going to melt.
Yeah, Not dead.
Okay. Stevie gets back under the radio and she says, Antonio Bay, maybe this is what the quote is about in the beginning. If all of this was real, if this wasn't a nightmare and we wake up in the morning safe in our beds, this could happen again. So beware of the fog. Any sailors out there, make sure to look across the darkness. Look for the fog. We see Father Malone walking around his sanctuary alone. Everyone else has gone, I suppose. Looking around, and he says to himself, why not six, Blake? Why not me? And we see fog start to creep in under his door.
No.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding.
Turns around. Blake is right in front of him. Slash! Credits.
Oh my God, Blake was like, don't test me.
Don't test me, I'll take ya.
I'll fucking get ya. Whoa, that was fun.
I gotta say,
from the second you said it was like a high school production, the only thing I could think about was, how do we get high schools to produce this all over the country? Because I want to see this on the stage.
I would love to see a high school production of The Fog. Oh my God, that's a good idea.
Well, how funny would that be? Can't you just imagine a high schooler up in that lighthouse that's permanently in the corner of the stage? And
absolutely incredible.
I think that there's a lot of opportunity here for any high schoolers who are listening. Wow. So was it a dream? Was it real? It's about how the past is going to come back and get us.
Yeah,
so we better fucking atone for our sins.
We better atone. It's also just, yeah, it's my friend Marty, recent guest on this podcast, host of Physical Therapy Movie Podcast, described it as like an episode of Scooby-Doo, but okay. but scary, like with murder. And that is, it's like a very classic ghost story
mm-hmm.
with mm-hmm. a fun little kind of pirate theme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because it the tension is great. The like final 30 minutes are really intense and really fun. It's also, I just kept feeling like the stakes feel really low to me because at this point, only one more person is going to die.
Right, right.
Like, I'm sort of like, all right.
Who cares?
I guess just one more person's going to die. To me, the fact that I knew it was only going to be six, the fact that the fog was like rolling in all over town, I'm like, yeah, but they're all going to be fine.
Right.
Everyone's
going
to be fine because it's just one more person.
Right, 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 right.
But they don't know that, obviously, you know, and maybe the pirates would change their mind and want to take the whole town. What do I know about what these pirates intend?
You know, I don't think I've ever seen one episode of Scooby-Doo.
Really?
I don't like don't even really know what that means. I mean, I know Scooby-Doo is like they solve a mystery week and they're a bunch of.
It's always like seems like a monster or something. Yeah, something supernatural is. And then it's a person in a costume for some reason.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much always the end result of Scooby-Doo. Correct me if I'm wrong. I've watched the one about the Chupacabra so many times. For whatever reason, like, every Spanish class I ever took growing up was like, probably at Halloween we should watch the Scooby-Doo episode about Chupacabra.
Nope.
So, anyway, did that
okay.
a lot.
Okay, fascinating. Yeah, that's right. Like, the stakes feel so low that it's a little silly and it could have easily been PG if they just removed a few key moments.
Yeah.
But I still really enjoyed it. It was really fun.
It's really fun. It's just like a fun, silly watch.
I also just love the idea of a radio station in a lighthouse helmed by a woman. I just love
it's
that.
It's fucking cool.
I want yeah. that. I want to see
that. She does a great
that.
Job. She's very good at her job.
I also love the idea of a small town only listening to one radio station.
There's I love it too.
There's something very like comforting in all of this.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I really do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, part of the fog day.
Yeah. Tell me more about fog day.
Sounds like they get a fog machine, make fog happen in their house, change out some of the light bulbs for green light. Mm. Mm-hmm. Make pirate themed cocktails and watch the fog.
That's
fucking great.
Awesome. Oh wow.
So I would encourage everyone to participate in your own fog day if you would like.
Jesus.
I think anyone can
there.
Watch this movie for sure. It's not too scary.
There are people out there who are really just living life. Living
really
life.
Just living life. Absolutely.
Wow. Wow.
And yeah, so the it's really like this. It's shot really beautifully. Obviously, it's all practical effects because it's Carpenter. So it looks really cool. The scene at the with Stevie on top of the lighthouse at the end when the fog recedes, that was the part that they needed to like shoot to be played in reverse, which is very cool. They originally did not have the scene with Stevie at the lighthouse at the end. They did not have the scene of the corpse attacking Jamie Lee Curtis, but those were added to make it scarier.
Okay.
And longer. And I think that those are both very good scenes to have in the movie. Although the scene of the corpse attacking Jamie Lee is like, doesn't really make sense in the context of the greater movie. Like, none of the other corpses come to life. In fact, we don't even see any of the other bodies, but you know, who cares? It's
who
fun.
Who cares?
It's fun and spooky.
Who cares? We got more Jamie Lee time. That's
exactly.
all I care about.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Emily, I loved it. Thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank
I'm so
you.
Glad. It was, I told you, easy breezy, you know?
It was easy breezy.
And I don't think these are the ghosts that are in your house.
Yeah, TBD on those ghosts.
I think the ghosts that are in your house are probably much scarier. I think they are. You know, something to me about, like, a California ghost just doesn't seem as scary to me as a New England ghost.
Yeah, California ghosts are so
like a California
chill.
Beach ghost? Like, I don't know, man. I think it's, I mean, these guys were mean, but also, I don't know. They're pretty straightforward.
They were really abiding by some strict rules. If you just play by those rules, everything's okay.
Yeah.
I think I think I feel good about my New England ghost. I feel comfortable.
I mean, I'm really glad.
Presence. Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad because, you know, you're the one who has to deal with them.
I know. Well, TBD on that.
TBD.
Okay, well, I love you and thank you. I have to go so I can start negotiations with the ghosts over the life of my children. So
okay, yeah, that's an important thing to get to. That is a really important thing to handle. And so, you know, I'll sign us off with a little radio voice.
Please do, Delilah.
This has been Too Scared and Watch. Thanks to everyone out there for staying with us for this recap of The Fog, and from all of us here, Too Scared and Watch. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.
We did it. We made it. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch.
If you enjoy the show, please remember to subscribe and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. 5 stars only, or we will haunt you.
And if you simply can't get enough of us, we have good news for you. We have lots of bonus content available on our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast. You'll get access to video trailer reactions, 2 bonus episodes a month, the power to vote for upcoming episodes, and more.
And last but not least, you can follow us on social media at TSDW podcast.
We'll be back next week with a new episode.
We love you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.